Well, hoping you have bays on the bays, the second line of the middle five lines. The pasuk says that when Vashti refused to come at Achashverosh's command, by Yiktsef HaMelech Mo'od, the king was very angry. And in fact, the pasuk adds, and Agoris HaBach also adds it to the Gemara, Vachamose Baraboy, that his anger burned within. So the question is, isn't that an overreaction? Am I Dokabe Kulahai? Why was he so angry? Okay, she doesn't want to come, fine, but that he should get that angry. And Marshall also says the word boy, which means in him, suggests that it was something personal against him. So what was it? Omar Rabba Sholchale, because it means that Vashti didn't just refuse, she sent back a message to Ahasuerus saying, Bar Ahurure Da'aba, you stable boy of my father. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean, some of the Mephoshim say it may be, that he was literally a stable boy. There is a Medrash, for example, that says that his father, so we said before that he wasn't necessarily the next in line for the kingdom. We said either he was the most qualified or he bore his way in. But we find, for example, that Dariavish, who was the emperor of Taras Madai a few years before him, had previously been one of Belshazzar's guards. So it's possible that Ahasuerus really was a stable boy by Belshazzar. Or she might just mean, not that he's literally a stable boy, but like compared to him, you're no better than a stable boy. She says to him, Abba Lakovo Alpha Hamra Shossi, my father Belshazzar was able to drink as much as 1,000 people would, and he didn't get drunk. Veloy Robbie, and he didn't get drunk. As, in fact, we find in Daniel, in Sefer Daniel, when it describes the banquet that he made at which there was a writing on the wall, it says exactly that, that he drank as much as 1,000 would usually drink. Okay, Tosfos HaRosh says maybe it doesn't literally mean 1,000, maybe it means like as much as the top people among 1,000, whatever. The point is he was able to drink a lot more than you, and he didn't get drunk. Whereas that person, meaning you, Achshverosh, right away, you drank a little, and you're getting drunk, and you're getting silly. So therefore his anger flared within him that she had insulted him like that. So the pasuk continues, the king said to the chachamim, so man chachamim rabban. Now when we say chachamim, we mean the chachamim, the Jewish chachamim, which Marsha points out, the word chachamim itself could mean goyish chachamim as well. But since, as we're going to say now, that it continues, yodei ha'itim, and the Gemara says, yodei ha'itim, the ones who know the times, meaning she'yodin ma'abah shonim v'lechlei ha'chadoshim, they're the ones who are the experts in knowing how to declare Ibru Yodin and to declare when Rosh Chodesh is, so that necessarily, therefore, means the Jewish chachamim. Omalahu dainuali. So he tells them, judge her for me, tell me what I should do about her. There was a very interesting explanation, by the way, that Yonis and Ibershitz says that, so why does he need doubt the people who are experts in the calendar? The vort is, he explains, that the Medrash says that Belshazzar, who we said was Vashti's father, was killed on the night of Pesach. So the Yaris Vash, the Rias and Ibershitz, makes a whole calculation to show that the seventh day of the party over here was the first night of Pesach, or the first day of Pesach, whatever. So therefore he's wondering, is now indeed Pesach? If yes, then fine. She has an excuse. She's in mourning for her father, you know, whatever the Goyish equivalent of a Yortzeit is, and therefore I'm not going to be so harsh on her. If not, then not. So therefore he's asking them, who are experts on the calendar, to determine that for him. But the Omru, the Chachamim, said among themselves, Eichi Nevid, how should we do it? Namely, Katla, should we tell her, yes, go ahead and kill her for disobeying the king? The problem is, L'macha Posik Lechamre, the next day, or when however long it's going to take, Achashverosh's wine is going to dissipate, he's not going to be drunk anymore, and then he's going to realize what happened, Ovoi Laminon, and he's going to demand her blood from us. We're going to get in trouble that we caused the queen's death. Namely, Shavka, should we tell her, leave her alone? The problem is, come Zalzal of Malchusa. She did disobey the king. She did treat the king very, very disrespectfully. And if we say now, leave her alone, then he's going to hold it against us that we said, that's not so important. So either way, we only stand to lose. So, Omruloi, so instead they told him, ever since the Bes Mikdash was destroyed and we were exiled from our land, Nitla Eitza Mimenu, advice, good advice has been taken away from us. We don't know what to judge in capital cases like this. We don't know what to do. Instead, they told him, Zil Lagabe Amun Umoyav, instead go to the sages of Amun Umoyav, the Yasku Bidukhtai, who they remained living in their lands, Kechamra the Yosef al Judaye, like wine that's still sitting on its dregs, in other words, like wine that's been sitting for a long time and not been stirred up, where all the dregs have fallen to the bottom and the wine on top is very clear. So they're telling him that they have clear ideas what to do, so talk to them. Tosfos discusses that actually maybe it shouldn't say Amon U'Moyav, because Amon, we find Sukkim, that Amon was taken into Golos. Moyav not. It seems that Moyav, when Sanhedrin conquered all the various lands and exiled their people, like he did to the Aseres HaShavatim, and like he did to many other countries, it seems that for whatever reason he left Moyav alone. And in fact, the Pasuk that the Gemara is going to quote now is about Moyav, not about Amon. So Sotah ben Etam says in Tosfos that maybe they're telling him only to go to the sages of Moyav. Anyway, and the Gemara says the time of Omrulay, and in fact, what they were telling him had a reason. It was a reasonable point. It wasn't just an excuse. The fact is, it's true that nation didn't go into Golos, and therefore they were in a much better situation. Dichtiv, as the pasuk in fact says, Shanan Moyav Moyav min Urav. Moyav has been peaceful since their youth. V'shoyke tu el shmarav. They're sitting quietly on their dregs. V'loy hurak mikliyo keli. They haven't been poured from one vessel into another, which again, the metaphor is like you have wine that's been sitting there in a wine cellar for a long time, and therefore is very clear. They haven't gone into Golos. Therefore, their advice and their reason has remained with them. Tamay literally means their taste. I mean, in other words, in terms of the metaphor, the taste of the wine. And its smell has not changed or dissipated. So therefore, so they're telling him go to Moyav or Amun or Moyav, whatever, and talk to them. So in fact, Miyad right away. Also continues. In other words, so there's two different groups over here. First, he went to Chachamim Yodeitim, and then when is the Gemara saying they didn't give him an answer? Then instead, he went to Kaushin Asheisar, etc., who are the Goyisha sages, the Goyisha ministers, advisors, whatever, to ask them. Why does it have to give their names? So Amr of Levi. Amar Rav Levi called Pasuk Zal Shrum Korbanus Nema. All of the names in this Pasuk are actually hinting at the Korbanus. In other words, the word Vakorev Elov doesn't just mean the ministers who were close to him, because then it would have said Vakorev Vim Elov, since it's seven. It means it's hinting at the Korbanus that Hashem brought, the Korbanus that the Jewish people brought to Hashem. Now the Malachim are mentioning it to Hashem, Rashi says, and actually Targumon and Megillas Esther says the Chachamim themselves are also davening to Hashem and saying, in the schus of those korbanos, please take revenge against that wicked Vashti, who, as we learned on Friday, she used to force Jewish girls to work for her on Shabbos and did various other vicious. So now please punish her in the schus of the korbanos that we Jewish people brought. So let's go through the names. Karishina means Omru Malacha Asharis Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Malachim are saying to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Klum Hikrivu Lefanecha Korin B'nei Shana. Did the Goyim ever offer to you Korin, which means fat sheep, B'nei Shana, that are within their first year, Kedar Sheikrivu Yisrael Lefanecha, like the Jewish people have brought to you? So Karishina is short for Korin Shana. The next minister is named Shesar, and it hints that the Malachim are asking Hashem, have the Goyim ever brought to you as a korban two turtle doves? Did they ever build before you a mizbeach made out of earth, like it says in the pasuk, mizbeach adama tasali? Did the Goyim ever serve before you wearing the clothes of the Kohenim? Where among the precious stones on the Choshen, you have the last row, begins with Taushish, so therefore the minister here named Taushish hints at that. There's an interesting Mesha Chochma that says, by the way, so why out of the 12 stones of the Choshen, why is that one picked? And he says, because Taushish was the stone of Shevet Osher. The Medrash tells us that Shevet Osher, they were blessed with, they had very beautiful daughters who were suitable to marry Kohenim Goyim. So therefore, the Malachim are saying to Hashem, look at that. The Jewish people, like Shevet Osher in particular, have beautiful daughters, and they raise them in a way that the Tzniastic girls and are suitable to marry the Kohenim Goyim. Whereas look at this, the Goyim have beautiful women like Vashti, and what do they do? Like we were saying before, they're gonna appear in front of every nation. So remember that schus for the Jewish people. Meres, the fifth minister is named Meres, means the Malachim say to Hashem, Klum Mirsu Vadam Lefanecha. Did the Goyim ever stir the blood in front of you? Sometimes you have. When a korban is brought, they have to sometimes stir the blood to prevent it from congealing until they have the chance to sprinkle it on the Mizbeach. And Marsina is Klum Mirsu B'Menachos Lefanecha. Did they ever stir the Menachos before you, where Mincha is made of flour and oil that have to be stirred together? And the seventh one, Mimuchan, Klum Hechinu Shulchan Lefanecha. Did they ever prepare a Shulchan with Lechem Aponim before you? So in other words, in the schus of all those things that the Jewish people did in the Beth Mikdash, and the Goyim have not, and especially since Vashti was one of the ones who spearheaded the fact that the permission to build the second Beis Mikdash was rescinded was partly due to her. So therefore, the Malachim are saying, remember the schus of these things on behalf of the Jewish people and punish Vashti appropriately. Okay, so the positive is Vayomer Memuchan. So Memuchan spoke up. Tonem, we learn in a Braisa, Memuchan Zehoma. This is actually another name for Homa. Because he was ready, he was prepared for punishment. Rashi says it means, because eventually he was hanged. Marsha says it means that he was the one who tried to bring punishment and a disaster on the Jewish people, therefore he's called Memuchan. Actually, Tosfos brings a medrash that Memuchan is not Haman, but rather Daniel. And Tosfos says that why would Memuchan, if we say it's Daniel, why would he come up with this idea that to have Achashverosh publish a decree that every person should be master in his own household, because Daniel himself had a problem like that. He was married to a princess, the Pashtus, we're talking about one that he'd been Magaya, but whatever. She was of higher birth than he was, or whatever, so she lorded it over him. So now, up until now, he was forced to speak her language in his house, and now he realizes, you know what, now I have a chance to get that changed in my favor. Anyway, but the Gemara over here is saying that, no, Memuchan is home. From here we see that a hediyot, that a simple person jumps ahead. In other words, like it says in Pirkei Avos, that a chacham doesn't speak with name of Godol Heimenu, whereas the chilufain the Godol. So a hediyot, a low down person jumps and then speaks in front of all of them, because you see that Memuchan is listed seventh, and yet he's the one who spoke up lifnei Melech Vasari. Okay, so his advice included that liyas kol ish sarah b'beisa, that every person should be master in his own household. So Amar Rava, what's the point? Why does the Megillah have to mention that detail? Il mole igris harishonis. If it weren't for those first letters with that proclamation that every person should be master in his own household, there wouldn't have been left of the enemies of the Jewish people, which means the Jewish people themselves, any remnant or any survivor. Meaning, Amri, because, in other words, let's consider what happened when Haman sent out his letters saying that on Yud Gimel Adar, everybody has to be ready to kill the Jews. Why would the Goyim wait until the 13th of Adar? They're anti-Semites. They would go start doing it right away. But what held them back was the memory of these first letters. Amri, they said to themselves, "My high the shadr lam liyas kolish serbevei." So what's this that the king is sending out letters, a decree, that every man should be a ruler in his own household. Pshita, that's obvious. We don't need the king to tell us that. I feel a karcha bevese, even the most lowly person, Rashi mentions a gardan, which means a weaver, which in those times was considered a very degrading job. So even somebody degraded like that, Pardash bevese in his own house, Pardash Lahavi. He is already a minister. He's already a nobleman in his own house. So we know that already. We don't need the king to tell us. So therefore, that made them realize that the king is Samashoit. So now, years later, when Haman sends out his proclamations in the name of the king, then people are not so quick to act on them because they know that, it could be another one of Ahasuerus' shlusim.
How many years later? Also,
so altogether, it was 9 years later, because the party and Vashti's execution was Bishnas Sholosh Lamalfoy, and then Haman's letters were in the 12th year. So they're 9 years apart.
Was it foolish because how can you enforce it? Or just...
No, he's foolish because, in other words, like everybody's saying, we know that already. We know every man is supposed to be the master in his own household. So we don't need the king to be telling us. So it means Sami's a shoyte. He's just saying whatever his minister has put in his head. So now, when Haman sends out his letters, the same way people weren't that quick to act on them. And that's what we're saying. That saved the Jewish people, because by the time the 13th of Adar came, of course, they had the new letters that say that the Jews have the right to defend themselves and their soldiers have to protect them, etc.
Okay. 1 second. Saying that a man has to be a master in his own household may mean several things. It may mean that he may use violence, as Ahasuerus did against Vashti. It may mean the more common meaning, which is he has to keep his family in order.
Right.
But it's not so simple.
Okay, it's not so simple, but the point is that he's just saying in the Megillah, Lias kol ish sar beveser medabatil shaynamoy, that every person in his house is to be the one in charge, sar meloshin sar, and then speaking in the language of his house, and speaking in his own language, so everybody thinks to themselves, the Gemara is saying over here that what do we need Achashverosh to tell us that? We would know that ourselves. It's not like it's giving them any more authority than they already figured they had. So they figured he's Samashay.
It is a degree extra, because it tells that Achashverosh wanted forced to be used in other families, like he did in
Europe. Surrogate base, that doesn't mean anything about force necessarily. Okay, anyway, they decided that's what he's saying. There's no purpose for it. We know this already, and therefore in the future, when he sends out letters with orders or whatever, it means we don't have to necessarily take them so seriously. All right, the Pasuk then says, so they gave Ahasuerus advice, the Yafkid Amalch Kidim, that he should appoint officials in every city, in every country, whatever, and find all the beautiful girls and bring them to Shushan. So, Amar Rav, my dichtiv, what is the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Kol Orum Yasabadas, every crafty person, Orum means like smart and like thinks ahead, Yasabadas acts with understanding, Uchsil, but the fool, Yifrei Sivelas, spreads out his foolishness. So that means, the Pasuk is setting up a contrast like this, Kol Orum Yasabadas, Zedavid. That refers to David HaMelech. Now, he had a time when he also needed to find a beautiful girl at the beginning of Sefer Malachim. His servant said to him, we should find for my master the king a virgin girl. And the point was, he said that way she'll warm up David with her body because he was cold. Anyway, the point is that since it was clear that he only wanted one Nara, so, so anybody who has a daughter would bring them to show the shluchim that they might be, that she might be the one that they pick. So that's kol orum yasabidas. So David is smart and he acted with understanding to make sure that he got the best candidate. Uchsil yifrei sivelas. On the other hand, when the pasuk continues that the fool spreads out his foolishness, ze'achashvedish dichtiv yafkid amelach kidim. It says that he should appoint officials throughout the kingdom. Now he's saying, we want everybody brought to Shushan. And what's going to happen? All of these girls are going to have to spend the night with Ahasuerus. But in the end, only one is going to be picked as queen. So therefore, Koman, the Havala Brata, so anybody who has a daughter, Itamramine, would hire from him. Because what is the chances that she's going to be the one picked, and that at first Ahasuerus is going to sleep with her, is the chances that she's actually going to be the one picked are very low. So why should we bother? Why should we take the chance that she's going to wind up over there in Beis Hanoshim Sheni, as it says in the Gilas Esther? So therefore, like Ahasuerus was not necessarily getting the best candidates, so that's that he spreads out his foolishness, like he spread it out throughout the kingdom, saying that he wants a whole bunch of girls, but he's gonna be sleeping with, he's gonna be violating all of them, and then in the end, one of them is gonna get to be the queen. So who's gonna want to play such odds?
In case of the Melech, the people knew that the woman is not gonna be his wife.
The people also knew the woman is not gonna be his wife. Mestama, there's that also, yeah. But he made it clear to begin with that he only wants one Nara, and that's it. That's.
After he dies, a woman can be married. Which is considered to be...
So technically, actually, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that afterwards she could marry a king, so she would actually have been mutter to marry Shlomo if he wanted to, but she wouldn't be allowed to marry anybody else because, after all, she'd been used by the king, and in that sense, like the king's scepter, which is not to be used by another commoner.
Even without a
tzuba, right. But, they weren't married, they didn't have relations at all, but still, yeah. Okay. Next, the Pasuk says, Ish Yehudi Hoya B'Shushan Abir, Ish Yehudi. The Pasuk starts by introducing Mordechai as Ish Yehudi, where it sounds like it means that he's from Shevet Yehuda, and then the Pasuk finishes off Ish Yemini, that he was from Shevet Binyamin. So my karma, so what does it mean? First of all, Iliyahusei Koi, and so first of all, the question is, what does it mean that he's describing him as from Yehuda and from Binyamin? But that we're going to get to next. But first, the question is that the Pasuk gives his Yichus, but Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish Ish Yemini. Now, my karma, why is it mentioning these ancestors of his? Iliyahus HaKasi, if it's coming to tell his Yichus, L'yachse v'ozol ad Binyamin, then it should be giving generation by generation all the way back to Binyamin. Instead, ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish, there's a lot of generations skipped in between. El Maishnohani, so why is it listing only these ancestors? Tana, we learn in a brayso, kulan al shmoi nikru, because all of them actually tell us something about Mordechai himself. Namely, Ben Yair, why is he called the son of Yair? Means Ben Shaheir, a name Shaheir b'tfilasi, that he enlightened the eyes of the Jewish people through his tefillah, because their eyes were dark, they're thinking we're in trouble, we're going to be exterminated, chas v'shalom, and he davened to Hashem, and the Zavatul of Zera, and with that he lit up their eyes. He's called Ben Shimi, means Ben Shashama el tfilasi, means that Hashem listened to his tefillah. Ben Kish means Shehikish al Shari Rachmim v'nifecholoi. He knocked on the doors of Rachmim of Hashem, which, so to speak, were closed, and the doors were open up for him. So therefore, it mentions specifically those ancestors, Yoru, Shimi, and Kish, because those names tell us something about what he accomplished. Now, question is, Kori la Yehudi, first pasuk introduces him as a Yehudi, Alma mi Yehuda Kasi, which means, therefore, that he comes from Shevet Yehuda, the Kori la Yemini, then it calls him Yemini, which means from Shevet Binyamin, Alma Binyamin Kasi, so he comes from Binyamin. So what is it? Amar of Nachman, Mordechai Muchter bin Nimus, it means that Mordechai was crowned with his Nimus. Rashi explains, now there's a lot of different explanations, and there's a couple of different Yesois here as well. Rashi explains that Nimus is a Greek word that means a name. So therefore it means he was crowned with his names, in other words, that he was crowned with nice names, that, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that he had, his father was from Binyamin, his mother was from Yehuda, and he prided himself, and people prided themselves on calling him by both names. So he was distinguished by being called from Binyamin as well as from Yehuda. Usually you don't call a person by the name of the shevet his mother was from, but he was Muchter bin Nimusa. There is a different girsa, which Rashi mentions over here. Rashi says over here, Nare, like your sinan, and really it's not supposed to be Nare, but Kadi, which means like a jewel. So Rabbi Nachmanano brings a girsa, and the Oruch explains it in a little more detail. It means that the word Nimusa can also mean his laws, as in the laws of the Torah. He was crowned by being a very distinguished Yid who knew the whole Torah, Ka'adi, like a jewel, like a precious gem, that he was like unique in his generation in that regard. So therefore, so the Rashi doesn't like that, and therefore he takes out the word Ka'adi, but there is such a girsa. And in fact, there's another girsa that says that he was Ka'adi like Rabbi Baba Chana. In other words, that Rabbi Baba Chana in his times was distinguished for his yichus and for his knowledge of Torah, and Mordechai in his times was the same one. Anyway, the Gemara continues according to the girsa we have in front of us. Amar Rabbi Baba Chana, Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Ovid v'Binyamin v'Imay miYehuda. According to Rashi, this is a continuation of the previous explanation that the reason why he's called both Yehudi and Yemini is because his father was from Shevet Binyamin and his mother was from Shevet Yehuda. And again, even though you don't usually refer to the Shevet that a person's mother is from, but here he was Muchter bin Nimusa, he was crowned with his good names, and therefore he was known by both. The Rabbanan, say a different explanation. Mishpachas Misgoris Zubazu. What happened was, the different families of the Jewish people, Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin, were arguing, were debating with each other. Who gets the credit for that Mordechai is around? Mishpachas Yehuda Emeres HaNogdorim, Shevet Yehuda claim that they were the ones who deserve the credit, that Mordechai is here to save the Jewish people. The Misyalad Mordechai, that through them Mordechai was born, the Shimi ben Gera, because hundreds of years earlier, Shimi ben Gera, who was the Shimi, who was the ancestor of Mordechai over here, had cursed and insulted David, and David by rights should have put him to death as a murderer of Malchus, but he didn't, and that enabled that later on he had children who one of them became the ancestor of Mordechai. So therefore, Shevet Yehuda would take the credit for that Mordechai exists. Or Mishpachas Binyamin, Amrami Nai Kasi. On the other hand, Shevet Binyamin said, yeah, I'm the one who gets the credit for Mordechai existing. He's from my Shevet. So that's another reason why he's called both Yehudi and Yemini, because both Shevatim took credit for him. Rabba said, on the contrary, they were taking credit. Each Shevet was blaming the other one for the situation. Knetzis Yisrael Amr Le'idach, he said, means the Jewish people were saying just the other way around. Look what a Yehudi, look what somebody from Shevet Yehuda did to me, that he caused this whole trouble to come out in the first place, and how the Yemini, the one from Shevet Binyamin, what he did that also caused this whole near catastrophe to happen. Ma also the Yehudi is the opposite. The loikat le David the Shimi the Isyalim in Mordechai. The fact that David did not kill Shimi, who was an ancestor of Mordechai, and what good would it have done if David had killed Shimi? The Mikni be Haman, because after all, Haman first got jealous at Mordechai. If Mordechai hadn't been there, nobody would have provoked Haman, and therefore, so in other words, they're blaming Mordechai for precipitating the whole thing by provoking Haman by not wanting to bow down. The truth is, actually, al pi halacha, there might have been reasons al pi halacha possibly for Mordechai to be allowed to. For one thing, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin and a couple of other places, there's something called Ovid Miyira, where you bow down, where you have, for example, a person is claiming that he himself is an Avodah Zarah, as Haman was, and you're bowing to him out of fear for example, that he might physically harm you. So the Gemara talks about the possibility that maybe that's not considered full-fledged Avodah Zarah. Besides which also, of course, Mordechai could have stayed away rather than being there and not bowing. or whatever. So, but in any case, some people held it against Mordechai that he had precipitated the whole thing by provoking him. So therefore, it's like they're blaming Shevet Yehuda for the fact that Mordechai was around. And then they would blame, well, look what the Yemini, look what the one from Shevet Binyamin caused the whole problem. They cut the Shol la'agag, that Shol in his time did not kill Agag, the Isyalim in the Haman, that from him was a descendant Haman, the Mitzrayim, the Israel, who's harassing the Jewish people. So in other words, if it hadn't been for Shol, so people were saying, if it hadn't been for Shol's mistake, if he had killed King Agag, we'd never have a Haman to deal with. And if if David had killed Shimi, then we wouldn't have had a Mordechai who ended up provoking Haman and causing the whole crisis.
Both did get killed, but not at the right time.
Right, but that's the point. They got killed, both of them, but after they already had children. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Rabbi Yochanan says a third explanation. La'olam b'Binyamin Tarsi. Actually, Mordechai was strictly from Shevet Binyamin. We don't necessarily have to say that he was called Yehudi because his mother was from Shevet Yehuda. We don't have to say that the Shvatim are taking credit or assigning blame for him. The reason he's really from Shevet Binyamin, Ba'amai Korila Yehudi. Why is the Pasuk calling him Yehudi? Al Shum Shekofra Ba'Avodah Zarah. Because he denied the power of Avodah Zarah by not wanting to bow to Haman. Shakola Kofa Avodah Zarah Nikra Yehudi. Anybody who denies, anybody who rejects Avodah Zarah is called by the honorable name Yehudi. Marsha points out because the name Yehuda itself includes all four letters of Hashem's name. So therefore, a person who denies and then rejects and fights against Avodah Zarah deserves to be called Yehudi. Kedichtiv, as you have the pasuk about Hanani Mishael Azariah, which are where they tell Nebuchadnezzar, Isai Guvrin Yehudayim, there are men from Yehuda who don't want to bow down to your statue. Now, there is actually the Tosfos points out that there is a machloikus in Sanhedrin whether Hanani Mishael Azariah were descended from Shevet Yehuda. So if we say they weren't, then we have to say why are they being called Yehudayim? Is because they rejected Avodah Zarah and therefore they deserve the title Yehudi. So we see it from the Megillah and we see it from this. But Maharsha points out, even according to the opinion in Sanhedrin, that they were in fact from Shevet Yehuda, nevertheless, why would the Goyim, when they're telling the Nebuchadnezzar about what these guys are doing, why do they have to mention specifically that they're from Shevet Yehuda? They should say they're Jews in general. So the fact that they mention Yehudayim shows them. So in this connection, speaking of Yehudi, meaning somebody who rejected Avodah Zarah, so the Gemara brings a drasha related to that point. Reb Shimon ben Pazi, Kiyava Posa, Divrei Yomim, when Reb Shimon ben Pazi would start giving a drasha on Sefer Divrei Yomim from Tanakh, Omar Hochi, he started his drasha like this. Kol Dvarecha Echonheim, all of your words, he's speaking to Hashem, all of your words that you wrote, that you told the Nevi'im to write in this book, Echodheim, they're really one. In other words, many times you have many different names in the pasuk that seem to be referring to different people, but really they're referring to one people, to one person. But Anu Yodin B'Doshan, and we know how to douse in them, that even though you make it look like there are many different people, but you gave us clues and you made it, you opened up our hearts to be able to douse in them. So here's an example. A pasuk says in Divrei Yomim, the Ishtei HaYehudia, his Yehudia wife, the pasuk before that, this way he's talking about Kalev. His Yehudia wife, Yolda, she gave birth as Yered Avi Gedor to Yered the father of Gedor, as Chever Avi Sarichai, as Yikosia Avi Zanayach, the Eile Bnei Visya Bas Parai. These are the children of Visya, the daughter of Parai. Ashalokach Mored, who Mered married. So now the you would think if you were just reading the pasuk superficially is that you have many different people mentioned over here. You have Yered, who later on became the father, meaning the mayor or the chief or whatever of the city of Gedor, and Chever, who did the same thing in Soichai and so forth. But Reb Shimon Pazi is explaining all of these are actually referring to the same person, namely Moshe. So first of all, when we say that Basya is called, Bisya really is how she's called in the Pasuk, Amai Korila Yehudia, why in the Pasuk is it calling her Yehudia? Al Shem, Al Shum, Shekofra, Avodah Zarah, because she denied and rejected Avodah Zarah. Dichtiv, as you have in this week's parasha. Vateret Bas Pari Luchat Alay Earth, the daughter of Pari went to bathe in the river, V'om Rav Yechanan, she yoda Luchat V'gilu L'vei Sabia. She went to wash herself off of the tumah of the idols of her father's house. She wanted, Rashi says, she wanted to tovel for purposes of gavus. Maharsha says, okay, maybe it doesn't literally mean tevila, because then it wouldn't say luchot, then it would say litvol or something. So what it means is that she wanted to wash the filthiness of it off herself, kind of, symbolically. So we see that she was rejecting Avodah Zarah, therefore she's called Yehudia. So now, if the pasuk is referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, what do you mean yolda? What do you mean she gave birth? V'holi ravuya rabisa. She didn't give birth to Moshe. She raised him. If loy malach, that comes to teach you, shekala magado yosim yisema v'sech beise, that anybody who raises an orphan in their house, mala olav akasav kila yolda, the pasuk considers it as if he gave birth to him. Now, Moshe is not literally an orphan, but the fact is his parents couldn't keep him at home because of the danger, and Basya raised him, therefore she's called in the pasuk as if she gave birth to him. Fine, but that was Basya's doing. She raised him in her apartments in the palace, and yeah, I mean, he was around in the palace, but there's not a power he raised him, you know, just in the palace. So now let's douse in the names. Yered Zemosha. The first name of the pasuk Yered refers to Moshe. The Lomanik Rashma Yered. She Yored Lahem Lisrom, Mon Biyama, because in his times, the mon came down for the Jewish people in his schus, and in fact, it came down in his schus, in fact. So therefore, he's called Yered. Gedur, Shagoda Putisei and Shoyisrael, he fenced in the breaches of the Jewish people, which means Marsha says he taught them Torah, and therefore fenced in the breaches like of how they behave. Different explanation is also you actually have a Lashon HaPasuk in Tillim that says that when Hashem threatened to destroy the Jewish people after the Chet Ego, Lula he would have done it, Lula Moshe Omer Beperes upon him, that Moshe stood in the breach and defended the Jewish people. So that's also what it means. Chever means Shechiber is Yisrael Avi and Shemashmaim. He connected the Jewish people to their father in heaven. So then it says, and so we said he was so Yered Avi Gedur. So far we've doubted Yered and Gedur. We're leaving the Avi for later. We doubted Chever. Next, Soichoi is Shenasa Lahem Yisrael Kisukah. He was like a sukkah that protected the Jewish people. Yukusil is called Shekivu Yisrael Lakel B'Yomav. The Jewish people trusted in Hashem and hoped for Hashem in his times. In other words, that every day they have to look out for the mon, and they only get a one day's supply at a time. So every day they're having to hope that Hashem will send them the mon. And that way they connected with Hashem on a much higher level. Zanoyach, he's called Avi Zanoyach. She's Niach, I mean, he's saying, Israel, he caused Hashem, so to speak, to forget and to neglect the Averis of the Jewish people. Then, now we left out those three times it says Avi, because you have Yered Avi Gder, Chever Avi Soichai, and you can see Avi Zameyach. So those three Avi, means Av Torah, he was the father in Torah, because he taught the whole Jewish people Torah. Av Chachma, he was a father in Chachma, he was the greatest of the Chachamim. Av Nevius, and he was a father in Nevius, he was the greatest of all the Nevi. And Marshall says, in particular, we're saying that he was a Navi, he knew that the Jewish people are going to do wrong, again, and he's still every time davening for them, davening to Hashem. So the pasuk finishes off Be'ela b'nei Bisya asher lokach Mored. So we're saying these are the children of Bisya whom Mored married. So we have to say, what do you mean? B'chi Mered Shmoy. His name, her husband's name was not Mered. Valei Kolev Shmoy. His name was Kolev. As it says, the previous pasuk is talking about Kolev. By the way, Marashah explained the reason why Reb Shimon Matazi knew to douse in this pasuk about Moshe is because if it was just talking about Kolev's own children, then it would have said the Eila B'nei Kolev Asher Yolda Lo Bisya Ishtar or something to that effect. When it said it credits them to Bisya, whom Mered married, then we understand that it means that they have a more direct connection to Bisya, and therefore it refers to Moshe Rabbeinu whom she adopted. So Omer Hakadosh Baruch Hu means Hashem said it's a very appropriate shidduch. Yobe Kolev Shemorad Batas Meraglim. Let Kolev, who rebelled and rejected the idea of the Meraglim to speak Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael, let him come. The Yisras Baspare, let him marry Baspare Shemorad Begilul Veisavia, where she rejected and fought against the Avodah Zarah of her father's house. So therefore, that's why in this pasuk it refers to Kolev as Mered, to represent that idea that he and she were both rebels against wrongdoing.
The Pashtus,
we don't know when he married her, actually. There is actually an explanation that he married, that the psukim also, there's other psukim in Divrei Hayamim that the Chachamim darshan to say that he married Miriam. So what it might be is actually, it may be that he married Miriam, and after Miriam passed away, then he married Bastia. Or maybe the other way around. Maybe he married Bastia, and afterwards, after she passed away, he married Miriam. Anyway.
In those days, they didn't have two wives.
Well, he could have had Basya and Miriam both as two wives. I mean, it was long before Cherem Deben Agershim, of course, but not necessarily. I mean, the pastors, he wouldn't have had, like, well, you know, each of them is going to have to be a tzara to the other. He wouldn't have necessarily had a reason to do that. Okay. Next, getting back to the Megillah, the Pasuk says about Mordechai, Asher Hoglom Yerushalayim, that he was exiled from Yerushalayim. Now, the point, now Rashi says, if it just meant that he was among the ones who were exiled involuntarily, then it would have just said, Asher Hoyom, and Agoyla Asher Hoglasa. Instead, when it says, Asher Hogla, that he was exiled, Im Hagoyla, with the Goyla, implies that he was with them, but not really a part of them. So what does it mean? Omar Rav Shem Gola Me'atzmi. He went into Golos voluntarily, meaning that like this, you had the people were being taken into Golos. This is 11 years before the Churban. In particular, the great Talmud Chachamim, the Chorash, and the Master were being taken. So he voluntarily went along with them in order because he knew this way he can lead them in Torah. And this way, for example, if all the other Chachamim are leaving, then he might as well leave also because he wants to be together with them. Rashi compares it to the point where we find after the Churban, 11 years later, Yirmiyahu also wanted to voluntarily go with the Jews into Golos Babel, even though Nebuzaradan told him, you don't have to, until Hashem told him, no, your job is to stay in Eretz Yisrael and help the Jews who are there. So Mordechai was saying, did the same thing. That's where it says, Hashem, Hoglom Yerushalayim. Tosfos points out, the fact is, if it meant that he was taken involuntarily, the word would not be Hoglom, but rather Huglom. Hoglom suggests that he voluntarily did. Now, Shor explains also a different way of understanding it, the fact that it has to, that the pasuk is repetitious, that it says, Im ha-goyla asher hoglasa asher heglon v'chanetza melech babel, so therefore, so it means that he went voluntary.
It brings the idea that it was in the same spirit that Yaakov Avinu went to Mitzrayim to lay the way for the Golos.
Okay. Next, the pasuk says, Vayhi oimen es hadasa, that he was raising and fostering hadasa. So what was her real name? Kardila Hadassah, the Kardila Esther. She has both names. So which one was her real name? Tanya, Rav Meir Oimer, Esther Shma, her real name was Esther, Velama Nikoshma Hadassah, Al Shema Tzadikim. She's called Hadassah because Hadassah, the Hadassim, is a metaphor for Tzadikim. Shenikru Hadassim, we find that Tzadikim are called Hadassim. V'cheinu Oimer, V'hu Oimer Ben Hadassim, as we find in the Nevuah of Zechariah, where he speaks of Hashem, so to speak, standing among the Hadassim, Asher Rashi adds, that the Pasuk adds, Asher Bamitsula, that are in the swamp, which means in Babel, which was low-lying and swamp. So we see, in other words, that the Tzadikim in Babel are compared to Hadassim, and therefore she was called that also. But her real name was Esther. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Hadassah Shema. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, her real name was Hadassah. V'lominik l'shma Esther, al-shem shahisim asteres, because she hid her words, she hid her origin. As the Pasuk says, that she wasn't telling what nation and what people she was from. Rav Nechemya em Hadassah Shema. Rav Nechemya says also, like Rav Yehuda, that her real name was Hadassah. The Loma Nikras Esther, why was she given also the name Esther? Show you almost to Olam Koin Osal Shum Istahar. Because the nations of the world called her by the name Istahar. Rashi explains the word Istahar means the moon, with the Aramaic word for moon is Sihara. So therefore, so it means they said she's as beautiful as the moon. There are other mephoshim who explain that Istahar is a word in Persian or in some other related language for the planet Venus. So they were saying that she's as beautiful as the star, as the planet Venus, as the morning star. Ben Azayim, Esther Loya Ruchav, like Tzara Haisa, Ben Azay says, here's another reason why she was called Hadassah, because she was Esther Loya Ruchav, like Tzara Haisa, she was neither too tall nor too short. Ella Beninus, she was medium-sized, Kahadasa, like a Hadass bush, and therefore, in other words, it's meant to explain, part of her beauty was that she was of average size and average proportions, rather than too tall or too short, which are not attractive. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says another point, why she was called Hadassa. Esther Yerach Roikas Hosa. Really, she was greenish in color, like a Hadass. But a thread of kindness was drawn over her. In other words, Hashem made it that she appeared graceful and beautiful, even though objectively she wasn't necessarily that beautiful. But like everybody who saw her felt a certain grace and beauty, even though objectively it didn't have. So that's what it means. Therefore, that's another reason why she was called Hadass.
He brings the brother that says that she wasn't beautiful, but because of the pain she being taken by her, that made her greenish.
That made her, yeah, could be. Okay. The Pasuk says, Ki ein lo av v'aim. The Pasuk says she had no mother or father, she had no father or mother, and that's why Mordechai raised her. And the Pasuk continues, V'mois av yav ima, when her father and mother died, then Mordechai took her in. So, Lomeli, why do we need to add that part, when her father and mother died? Because it means she never had a father or mother. Ibrata mesavia. As soon as her mother became pregnant with her, her father passed away. Yoladata, and as soon as she was born, meseima, her mother died, so she never actually knew her father or mother at all. And as soon as her father is capable of being called her father, as soon as she was conceived, then he died. As soon as her mother is capable of being called her mother, that she gave birth to her, she died. Next, the pasuk says, when her father and mother died, Mordechai took her for him as a daughter. Don't read Levas as a daughter, but Levias as a household, meaning that Mordechai married. Well, not doesn't mean as married her as soon as she came to her house. He means that once she was old enough to be of marriageable age, then he married her. He raised her and then he married her, yeah. We find a similar vein that the word levas can refer to a wife. Where Nosan Anavi is coming to David and giving him a mashal to illustrate to him what he did, what an inappropriate thing he had done by taking Bathsheba and causing Uriah's death. So the Navi gives a metaphor. The La Rosh Ein Kol, the poor person representing Uriah, had nothing. Ki in Kibsa Achastana, except for one little sheep. Ashakona, which he bought, by Chayeha, and he kept it alive, by Tigdal Imavin Bonav Yachtav, she grew up together with him and his children, Mipito Seichal, she ate from his bread, Umikose Sishta, and she drank from his cup, Umacheke Sishkav, and she lay in his lap, but Tehilo Kavas, and she became to him like a daughter. So we have to understand, Mishum de Vacheke Sishkav, Havisle the Mas, what does that mean? She lay in his lap. They're usually to lay in somebody's lap. The b'cheka is not really a lap, it's more like a bosom or whatever. To lie in somebody's bosom usually means to have relations with them, to be married. So what does that mean? They're in each other's bosom, and therefore she's like a daughter. Ella Levi's. So it means that she was his wife, which therefore that's what the Navi is telling David that you have. That's the situation with Uriah. You, David, are like a rich man who have many wives, and you have, in the metaphor, you have many sheep. In real life, you have many wives. Uriah is like this poor man who has only one sheep, and in the Nimshel, he has only one wife, and you took her away from him. Yeah, this is after he was sent to the front and died, but still the Navi is criticizing David that he did. This is before he did Shuv, actually. This is the Navi first coming and telling him, and then after that, David started doing Shuv again. Hochinami Levias. So the same way over here, when it says that Esther was Levas, then it really means Levias, that she became his wife. Now, the pasuk continues. So Esther was brought to the palace, and by the way, now, on the face of it, before that, it said that they were only going to bring Noris Sulos. They were only going to bring virgins, but we see that Esther was taken, which shows that, before Shem explained, that shows that later on, maybe because Ahasuerus wasn't getting the quality candidates that he wanted, as we said before, everybody's hiding their daughters from him, then he extended it, and he's going to grab even married women. So therefore, Esther ended up being taken. So the pasuk describes how she's in the palace and she was given everything that she needs. The ace sheva and oris v'gemer. She was given seven maid servants to serve her. So why seven, Dafka? Amar Rabba shows a moina behen yemei Shabbos. She used them to count the days of the week that she would have. Each one of these maid servants serves her on one day of the week, and that way, when the one for Shabbos comes, then she knows today is Shabbos. Why would she need that? So one possibility is that the Persians didn't necessarily have a 7-day week, and therefore she's not going to be able to keep track. She has to keep secret that she's a Jewish woman, so she can't tell them. By the way, before she would give a huge number of reasons why Mordechai told her not to tell what nationality she's from. Among them is Mordechai was hoping that Ahasuerus is not going to want her, is going to send her away. This way, if she refuses him at some point, he's not going to take it out on the Jewish people. This way, he won't force her to do things against Yiddishkeit, etc. There are at least a dozen reasons why he gave her these instructions. But anyway, so that's one possibility. Rabbi Yonasan Eibeschutz makes an interesting point. Also, he said, listen, she can't, again, she has to keep it secret that she's Jewish. So she doesn't want to work on Shabbos, but what's she going to do if she has the same maid servants every day and she works 6 days and not on Shabbos? Her secret's going to be out. So she had a different maid servant every day. So the other six, as far as they know, she's working on Shabbos as well. They're not there to see otherwise. The seventh one, she's resting on Shabbos. As far as she knows, she's resting the rest of the week too. Again, she has no way of knowing. Apparently, they didn't talk to each other, yeah. The pasuk says by Shaneha Vasnare Sehabagomer that he changed her, that Hegai Yasrisa Melech changed her and her maid servants to, he gave her Toiv Besan Nashim, the best of the women's house. So what's the best? Omarav Shechila Machel Yehudi means he gave her kosher food. So maybe she didn't let on that it might be, you know, she didn't let on that she's a Jewish woman, but still, you know, they knew she had been raised in Mordechai's house, so therefore maybe they figured she's used to this kind of food. So they supplied that for her. Shmuel says that it means that he gave her necks of pigs. Rashi translates it by the word bacon. So in other words, the toy based on Rashi means what they consider to be the best food, which is bacon. Now, Rashi says that she wasn't punished for eating it because it was an oinus. Tosfos, on the other hand, says, Chas v'shalom, she didn't eat such food. They offered it to her. She didn't eat it. On the side of it here, it brings the Aruch, has a third possibility, which is that kodli b'chaziri does not mean bacon, which is trey for meat at all. Rather, it means that they gave her lettuce heads. The chaziri could be l'chizri, or chaziri means lettuce, like chazeres. So it means they gave her heads of lettuce, and she ate that. Rabbi Yechanan says that when it says the best food that they gave her means they gave her seeds of various kinds that she could eat those seeds and peas and beans and whatever. So that way she could eat that and that would do. She'd get protein and that would be just as good as eating meat. V'cheinu Omer, you have a similar thing by Daniel Hanani Mishal Vazaria. By here, Meltzer Noses Pasbogam, that Daniel Hanani Mishal Vazaria arranged with their waiter who was serving them food in the Chanesser's palace that they should not be given tray for food. So it says he took the food, the Pasbogam, the food that was assigned to them and the wine that was assigned to them, and instead he gave them seeds. And as Rashi says, the pasuk continues that after a while they saw that they were even healthier than the other boys who were there who were eating the tereifa food. So we see that these zeroinim are a very good substitute for meat and wine, and therefore the tereif beis hanoshim, Rabbi Yechanan is saying, is that that's what they gave. Now, it describes in the Megillah the beauty treatment that they gave for all the women who were there. Shisha Chadashim Shemen Amur. It says they had them treated for 6 months with Shemen Amur. My Shemen Amur, what exactly is that? Rab Chia Ba'aba Omer Sakkes. It means Sakkes or Stacked, or however you pronounce the word exactly. It means some kind of, a perfumed oil, an oil with spices mixed into it, like the Shemen Amishka kind of. Rav Huna says it means oil from olives that were not yet one-third grown, which therefore that oil is very powerful, and therefore it has good effects on the skin. So in this connection, Tanya, we learn in a brisa, Rav Yehuda Anpiknun is Shemen Zayis Shalahei Vishlish, Anpiknun, which a Mishnah in Menachah says you cannot use it for a carbon mincha. What is the definition of Anpiknun? Is what Rav Huna just said is Shemen Amur. Shemen Zayis Shalahei Vishlish, oil from olives that have not grown one-third of their growth. V'loma Sochinoi, so why do people smear it on their skin? Shemasher is a sayer, it causes hair, unwanted hair, to fall out. V'ma'adin is a baser, and it makes the skin softer and more delicate. So therefore, so according to that, they had the women there in the Beis HaNoshim treated with it for 6 months. Next, the pasuk describes about each one of the women. In the evening she would come to Achashverosh, and in the morning she would leave. By the way, and the pasuk is coming to tell us the derogatory thing about Achashverosh, what a hedonist he is, how much he was into his own tivus and not caring about the women. But we see from that, incidentally, we learn a shvach of his, he didn't have relations by day because that was mystic. So therefore, the women would be brought to him only at night. Next, the pasuk says, "Vatihi Esther knows this chayin." It says that Esther would have grace in the eyes of everybody who saw her. Means that every person who saw her imagined that she was from his nation. So therefore, people usually have a tendency to like them, to like the appearance of the members of their own nation and their own ethnicity and whatever best. So every person imagined that she was from him, that she was from his, and therefore that caused them to look more favorably on her.
Without speaking to her in their language.
I guess even with, yeah. So the pasuk is Vatilokach Esther al Melech Achshverosh al Beis Machloseh. Esther was taken to King Achshverosh, to his palace, Vachodesh Asiri, who Chodesh Tevis, in the 10th month, which is the month of Tevis. Now, why dafka Chodesh Tevis? The reason is Yerach Shenan, a guf min a guf, because it's a month when it's cold, so therefore a guf enjoys the warmth and the closeness of another guf. So the point is, Rashi says it was Min HaShemayim to make it that this way she would be, that this way Ahasuerus would enjoy her the most, and that way make it much more likely that he would pick her as queen. Which, of course, the purpose of that was to save the Jewish people. Next, the pasuk says Vayev HaMelech has Esther mikol haNashim. It says the king loved Esther more than all the women, where Nashim usually suggests married women. Batisa chen v'chesed b'fanim mikol b'silvus. She had grace and favor in front of him more than all the virgins. So what does that mean? Amarab bikish litim tam b'silatam. When he had relations with Esther, when he wanted to have the feeling and the taste of how it would be with a b'sula, then he could feel that. Tom, ba'ula, Tom, and when he wanted the taste and the experience of being with a ba'ula, then he felt that also. So she had like the best of both qualities. Next, so she became queen, and the pasuk says, Vayas HaMelech Mishka Gadol. It says the king made a big party. Now, the point is, the pasuk says that party was Ace Mishte Esther, the party of Esther. Now, why does it have to mention that? So it means, Ovid Mishnia, he made a party in her honor, but like Galilee, and still, he's trying to worm the secret out of her, what nation she's from. So he made a party and announced, this is the party of Esther, and still she didn't want to tell. Dali Kraga, he gave a break to people on taxes, as the pasuk continues, Anocha Lamedinis Osa, but like Galilee, and she still didn't want to tell him. So like he's announcing in the whole kingdom, in honor of Esther, in honor of Queen Esther, I'm remitting taxes. And nevertheless, he figured that, especially Mephoshim on the Megillah say that maybe he figured like this, if she tells him what nation she's from, he'll give that nation extra breaks on taxes. And so she didn't tell him. Shada Pardishni, he sent out presents everywhere in the kingdom, as the pasuk says, Vayitin Masas Ki Anamela, but like Galilee, and still she didn't tell him. Next, the pasuk continues to be covets b'sulas shenis for them, that when the virgins were gathered together again. Now, first of all, why were they gathered again? He already has Esther; he doesn't need anybody else. Second of all, why did the pasuk continue with Mordechai Yoshev b'shar haMelech, that Mordechai is sitting at the king's gate? What does one have to do with the other? So it means Ozel shokel etzemi Mordechai. It means Achashverosh. He's very frustrated. He wants to know what nationality Esther is from, and she's not telling. So he went to get advice from Mordechai. That's why it says Mordechai Yoshev b'shar haMelech. Omer. So Mordechai tells him. Ein isha miskana elavi yarech tapetra. A woman gets jealous only because of the thigh of another woman. In other words, what will make a woman jealous when she sees that her husband is about to take another wife? Then that makes her jealous. So you want to convince her to tell the secret. She thinks that you might divorce her and take somebody else instead. That'll convince her to speak. And nevertheless, tiktiv ein esem mageres bavati v'hochi. Like Galilei, still she didn't reveal it to him. Tiktiv ein esem mageres melad v'gomer. As the pasuk continues in the next pasuk, that Esther wasn't telling. Which, now, why would Mordechai be giving such advice to Achashverosh? One point is, he did want that Achashverosh should divorce her. Why should a Jewish woman, especially we said before, his own wife, have to be in Achashverosh's palace among all the goyim? So he would have liked if Achashverosh is going to end up divorcing her.
Sure.
This is what Marsha says this. So that's why he gave advice to Achashverosh to see if Achashverosh finds somebody better, then by all means, let him divorce Esther. In the event, he didn't, so therefore, see, she stayed over there. And
I'm sorry, he could say this is his wife, but also.
Well, if he did that, then he'd really be in trouble because, it was supposed to be Solas after all. So Mordechai himself would have been in a heap of trouble if he had told her, yeah. Okay. Next. Amar Rav Elazar, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk in Mishlei? Lo yigra mitzadik einav. Hashem does not hold back from his eyes from the tzadik. In other words, Hashem pays attention to what the tzadikim are doing and eventually pays them back midah k'negan midah, even if it's many generations later. Or Marsha says also the word einav can mean like ke'ein, like similar to what they did. So what does that mean? B'schar tznius shahosa baba Rachel, in the reward for the tznius that Rachel had, as we're going to discuss, zoch sav yatsim ben shol, she had the schus that shol, who also had a sense of tznius, descended from her. And b'schar tznius shahosa baba shol, and in the schus of shol's tznius, that he didn't tell with things that he's not supposed to, Zachav Yatzis Menu Esther, and he had this source that Esther was descended from. Rashi mentions over here that the Targum of Megillas Esther, there are actually two Targumim, there's a regular Targum and there's what's called Targum Sheni, both of them include a lot of Midrashim, and then Targum Sheni in particular over there says, gives Mordechai his whole Yichus, and says that he's 10 generations from Shoal, and then Shoal, of course, is the descendant of Binyamin. Now, since Esther is the daughter of Mordechai's brother, that's a common misconception that she was Mordechai's niece. She was actually Mordechai's cousin, Bas Doidei. So her father and Mordechai's father were brothers, so therefore she's also descended from Shaul. So therefore, so we see this. So we should defend it from Shaul. Marshall points out, maybe not everybody agrees to that, because we said before that she's descended from Shimi, that Mordechai is descended from Shimi, who we said was the one who cursed David. Shimi himself was not a descendant of Shaul. He was a relative of Shaul, but not a descendant. So therefore, so our Gemara over here is apparently is disagreeing with that and saying that they were actually descended, that they were descended ben Achaben from Shaul. So where do we see that Rachel had a particular tzniyus? So we have to go back. When Yaakov and Rachel met by the well at the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, the pasuk says by Yaged Yaakov the Rachel ki achi aviyahu. Yaakov told Rachel that he is her father's brother. So what do you mean? Ki achi aviyahu? He's not her father's brother. He's her father's nephew. Ella, what it means is like this. The conversation went like this. Amrullah, he asks her minsvali, are you willing to marry me? Amrullah Ain, she says, sure. Mihu Abaramahu, but you should know that my father Lavan is a tricker, is a trickster, is a dishonest person. Vulayachlisa, you're not gonna be able to manage with him. He's gonna try to trick you, and you're not gonna realize it. Amrullah, so he tells her when he says Achi Aviyahu means Achvan Nobramos, I'm his brother, in other words, I'm his equal in trickery. So that's what he means by saying Ki Achi Aviyahu.
So,
to detail about one second. So she said to him, are tzaddikim allowed to act in a dishonest and a tricky way? He says, yes. As the pasuk says, im novar titovar, with the clean person, novar means clean and pure, you act cleanly. Vein ikesh, and with the crooked person, titapo, you have to act deceit. Yeah, he may have mentioned to her about what he did with Esav. Doesn't matter. The point is, in other words, he's saying, if your father tries to trick me, then I can match him action for action. Omrullah, so now he asks her, my Rami Yosef, how would he plan to trick me? Omrullah, so she says, if the achosad kashishim inoi, I have an older sister, well, I'm instantly, he's not going to allow me to marry you ahead of her. So he's gonna trick you, he's gonna bring in Leah instead of me to the chuppah. So Masa lost simonim. So Yaakov figured he'll evade that by giving her simonim. So certain simonim, certain passwords that she will tell him on the wedding night, and therefore if she doesn't know them, then it's not. Now, there is in fact an interesting explanation that the simonim are none other than the mitzvahs of a Jewish woman, Nidachala and Lachaneh. Anyway, Ki Mataleya, when it came the night of the wedding, and sure enough, Lavan is going to go through with the plot to substitute Leah for Rachel, Omra, so Rachel says to herself, Hashem Nichsfachasoi, now there's a problem, my sister is going to be humiliated. So she gave over the simonim to her sister. Now, the tznius, Rashi explains, is not just the fact that she didn't want her sister to get embarrassed. She didn't even want to have it publicized that there were ever any simonim at all. So that was the tznius that she had to keep such a secret. Thus the pasuk said, in the morning, and behold, she was Leah. So what does that mean? Plow that ash will love Leah. So what? Until now, it wasn't Leah. Ella mitoich simonim from Master Rachel Leah, because Rachel had given over the simonim to Leah. Lo have a yodad hashda. Therefore, only the next morning, when Yaakov sees her in the daylight, does he realize that it's Leah. So therefore, that was the tremendous tnius that Rachel had. Leficha zachs of yatsim and a shol. Therefore, she had this chus that King Shol descended from her. Now, so what tznius did Shaul exhibit? So, because you have the story over there when Shmuel tells him that he's going to be king, and then he comes back, he had been searching for the lost donkeys, he comes by Shmuel tells him he's going to be king, and what happens when he comes back home? His uncle asks him, so what happened while you were wandering around? He tells him that Shmuel told us the donkeys were found, but he did not tell him about the kingship, which Shmuel had told him. He kept it secret until Shmuel himself is going to announce it. So that was the tznius that he had. Now, therefore, Zachar b'Yotzim menu Esther, so therefore we have this chus that Esther was descended from him, Queen Esther, who also had that quality of tznius, as we said, that she kept secret that her nationality, and remember also she had to keep it secret for a long time. Again, she was taken for the whole contest began in Ahasuerus' third year. She was actually brought to Ahasuerus to have relations with him the first time in the seventh year, so that was 4 years later. We don't know how much of that time she was already in the harem over there, but then the events of most of the Megillah take place during the 12th year, so she had to keep the secret for at least 5 years, and maybe even as many as 9 years.
What was the third year?
The third year is when Ahasuerus made his party and when Vashti was executed. After that is advised. After that is his servants advise him to have the beauty contest. So it started then. When Esther was taken to the palace, when she was supposed to take to the harem, we don't know. We know that in the seventh year of Ahasuerus, she was brought to the palace, and Ahasuerus had relations with her the first time, but when she was actually brought before that, we don't know. So it was sometime between the third and the seventh year. And from then, from the beginning, she's keeping her nationality secret, so it's at least 5 years, and maybe even as many as 7 years, and maybe even as many as 9 years that she's keeping it. Yeah. And the Gemara continues. Omer of Elazar. Rav Elazar also says in this connection, Kshakodesh Baruch Hu poisek yidula la'odam, when Hashem decides that a certain person should have greatness, poisek levonu levonu ad seif kladoris, that Hashem decides, that Hashem continues, that it should go to his children and his grandchildren until the end of all generations. Shenema, as a pasuk says in Iyov, this is the continuation of the pasuk that we quoted before. We started with the pasuk la yigra mitzadik einav. The pasuk continues, "Vayach Malachim Lakisei," that Hashem puts kings on the throne, and then the pasuk continues, "Vayeshivim Lanetzach Vayigbohu." He makes them sit forever, and they chenema Vayeshivim Lanetzach Vayigbohu. He makes them sit forever, and they're high up. So we see that Hashem makes it that not just the Leyugam and Tzadik Einav, but Vayeshivim Lanetzach, they continue to sit in their high position forever. But being Hagis Daitei, but then if a person in those future generations is das ruach, meaning that he becomes proud of his position, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu mashpilo, then Hashem lowers it. Shenemar, as the next pasuk continues in Iyov, v'im asurim bozikim v'gomer, if they're tied up in chains, then they, in other words, and then pasuk continues, yilochtim v'chavlei oni, they're caught in the ropes and in the bonds of poverty. So in other words, then they lose their position and they become poor. Marsha explains also the word asurim is maloshin isur. If they do something which is aser, like Shaul did, where he just did something that was aser and left Agag and the animals of Amalekim alive, and therefore he lost that gula that should have gone to his future descendants.
This idea of tzniyas, is that physical?
We're talking about a mental tzniyas, kind of, yeah.
Keeping things secret.
I mean, we do find actually that Shaul was tzniyastic in his body also. For example, it says when he went to the bathroom that he went like inside a cave that was behind a fence and, yeah, like one cave inside another. Next, going back to the Megillah, the pasuk says that Mama Mordechai Esther Oisa, that Esther was doing the word of Mordechai. So what does that mean? Omer of Yemiya, Shoisa Mara Damnida L'Chachamim. She continued to show her Damnida to the Chachamim to determine whenever she had a Shaila, she would go and ask the Chachamim whether it is or not. Now, does that mean that she's doing it in order to be with Ahasuerush? Marshall says no. What would be the point of it? Ahasuerush is with her all the time. It's not like she can refuse him when she's Nida. But that was a matter of oinus, as we're going to talk about now in the Gemara. So it means, in other words, that she was showing in order to know when she taught her, as the Gemara is going to say soon, sometimes she would be able to sneak out and be with Mordechai. So that would be a reason. On the other hand, the Menois HaLevi on the Megillah says that maybe even it was, as much as possible, she would try to keep Hilchos Nida even when she's with Ahasuerush. The pasuk says, Kasher Hoysa Ba'omna Itoi, that she did this as she was when she was being raised by him. So Omer Rabba Balima Meshmei Derab Shahoisa Imedes Mecheke Shalach Hashverish. She would get up from the embrace of Achashverish with Tevelas, and she would tovel the Yeshevis Mecheke Shal Mordechai and come sit in Mordechai's bosom. In other words, remember, she was after all married to Mordechai, so therefore she would leave the palace whenever possible, and she'd tovel. Now, not strictly speaking, she doesn't need to tovel, because we said she was Mara Damnida. It means Rashi says she would tovel partially for cleanliness, so that so Mordechai doesn't have to be disgusted by the fact that she had just been with Ahasuerus, and then she'd go and sneak over to Mordechai to have relations with him, who was her actual husband. Tosfos brings up a point. Don't you have to have Achonah? That you never know when she becomes pregnant, whether it was from Mordechai or from Ahasuerus. So Tosfos says that she was meshamesh b'moich, that she used moich, that she used a cotton or something to absorb the zera. And Mefoshim discussed quite a bit the question, does that mean, well, who did she use the moich with Ahasuerus or with Mordechai? On the one hand, you know, Mordechai is not allowed to. On the other hand, with Ahasuerus, it's not like she could do it and get away with it. She'd be in trouble. And the fact is, we do see she became pregnant eventually, and she had Dayovish, who was Ahasuerus' son. So there's a good deal of discussion about that. There's also, incidentally, a lot of discussion about this. Is the fact that she was with Ahasuerus, does that in fact make her also to Mordechai? There isn't. Now, later on in the Gemara, we're going to talk about Kasher Avadi Avadi. There are actually Rishonim who learn that if a goy that if a goy has relations with a Jewish woman, even if it was berotzin, then the Rabban Tam, I think, and other Rishonim learn that in fact it doesn't make her also to her husband. It's considered like a behemoth. The halacha is not like that, though. The halacha is like other Rishonim who say that it would make her usur. But in this case, the reason why she's mutter to Mordechai is because, after all, it was oinus. She didn't willingly go every time. She's being forced into it by Achashverosh. Kauka Olam. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, Esther Kauka Olam Havoy, and there's a good deal of discussion about that. Does that mean in general that any woman is not usur because of Znus, because she's passive in it, or do we mean specifically Esther was passive, but not necessarily is every woman like that? Yeah, there's a huge amount of discussion about all this. There's lots and lots of Shilas and Trovas that you can find on this subject. Yeah.
A married Jewish woman to a Jewish husband.
One second, Marcia. Yaakov was in the middle of saying something. I guess that's true also. Yeah, that's part of what I mean. But it was Kauka Olam. Yeah. What are you saying, Avramarcia?
A married Jewish woman to her Jewish husband who has relations with a goy, is she forbidden to her husband?
Let me explain. I just said, there are Rishonim who learn that it doesn't matter whether it was willingly or unwillingly. Either way, there are Rishonim who learn that she remains mutter to her husband. I think the Rivam, for example, says this, a brother of Hermenatam, says this, because the goy for that purpose is considered like a behemah. And just like if she were to be sodomized by a behemah, wouldn't ask her to her husband, neither does it with a goy. The halacha is not like that, though. The halacha is, if it was ba'onis, then she's mutter, unless her husband is a kohen. If it was beratzen, then it's also just like if she had had relations with a Jew.
But she's not Chazkila.
If there was Aiden Vasra, then she might be. But again, no, there's no Aiden Vasra over here. But there are, again, there are Rishonim who learn that if it was, everybody agrees, all the Rishonim agree that if it was Ba'onis, it's Mutter, same way as it's no different than if it was a Jewish man who raped her. Either way, she's still Mutter to her husband, unless he's a Kohen. But if it was Berotzen, then you have Machlokes Rishonim, whether a Goy can ask her to her husband, the halacha is that he can.
Now, regarding Rachel and Yaakov, where did the simanim, who gave the simanim to Rachel?
We said Yaakov gave her simanim, but then she gave them to Leah. That's what we said.
How did she have the right to give them to Leah?
Because she didn't want Leah to be embarrassed. That's what we said.
But it was not Leah's simanim. Yaakov gave them to Rachel.
But nevertheless, Rachel knew that not embarrassing Leah and not even having it known in public that there were simanim is more important. That's what we're saying. That's the tenuous that she had.
So she embarrassed Yaakov, that was okay?
It's not a matter of embarrassing Yaakov. Eventually Yaakov was reconciled to it. There was no embarrassment to him. That night, he thought he was with Rachel, and later on, he discovered that he's married to Leah, and he still married Rachel afterwards as well. All right, let's go on. By Yomim Ahayim Mordechai Yeshu B'Shan HaMelech, the Pasuk says, at that time, when Mordechai was sitting in the king's gate, Kotzach Bigson Maseresh, so Bigson and Teresh got angry at Ahasuerus, and they planned to kill him. We find in history that Hashem made a master angry at his servants in order to accomplish what a tzaddik wanted. Umanu Yosef, who was that tzaddik, namely Yosef, as we find, Pare got angry at the Saramashkim and the Saraitim and threw them in jail, and through that Yosef was elevated. So we see that Hashem arranged it. Now you would think, in other words, he found a fly in his cup, found a pebble in his bread, big deal. Is it that to overreact like that and throw him in jail? It was all in order to accomplish that Yosef should get out of jail.
He had to wait another 2 years
because he put his trust in the guy. Yeah, fine. Okay. Avodim aladinem lasis nesvot tzadik. Conversely, we find a case where Hashem made servants angry at their master, also in order to accomplish a nesvot tzadik umanu Mordechai, namely for Mordechai, dichtiv vayivoda adavla Mordechai. As a positive, the matter became known to Mordechai. So, in other words, the whole reason why Hashem made Bigson and Teresh get angry at Achashverosh and want to kill him is in order that Mordechai should hear about it, and later on it should help to save the Jewish people. So. When we say that it became known to Mordechai, they were two people from Tarsi, so they spoke in their own language, so they're talking in their own language, which they figured nobody else in the palace knows, and they were saying one to another, ever since this woman, meaning Esther, came to the palace, we're not getting any sleep. Because Ahasuerus loves her so much that he's constantly wanting to have relations with her, and that makes him thirsty, so we're constantly having to bring him drinks. Boy, so come, let's put poison into his cup, so that he'll die. Now they figured they could get away with it because nobody's going to understand what they're talking about. They did not know that Mordechai had previously been a member of the Sanhedrin who sits in Lushka Sagazis, but you did, and then he knows 70 languages. So if we knew their language. So they continued making their plot. So one says to the other, my job is not the same as your job. In other words, Rashi says, we each have different jobs. How are we going to be able to coordinate this? Marshal learns a little bit differently. It means, in other words, that we're not both on duty at the same time. One of us is going to have to go and get the poison, so we're going to have to be off duty for a while. How are we going to be able to coordinate this? So the other one says, "Ani eshma mishmarti umishmartifa. I will serve at my job or my shift as well as your job or your shift. So that way, in other words, I'll cover for you, and that way you'll be able to go and arrange it." I saw actually a very interesting explanation also from one of the Acharonim who says that Tausium, we find sometimes in the Gemara that Tausium also means metal workers. So he was proposing to actually craft a new metal keli for Achashverosh with poison embedded in the metal. So that next time, so the first time he drinks from it, he'll get poisoned. So then he's saying, Mishmauti and Mishmauti are not the same. We have different jobs. How are we going to be able to coordinate to make sure that particular one? So he says, I'll cover for you, and that way we'll make sure. So, that's what the Pasuk, when it's the Pasuk said, the matter was searched out and it was found. What did they have to search for? It means, they found that they're not in their places or they're not doing the jobs that they're supposed to, and that got them suspicious, and then they started investigating and they found out what they were plotting.
Wasn't enough to get the ages from one person.
Maybe it was they couldn't just trust Mordechai. Okay. Next, the pasuk says after advarim ha'ila, after these things is when Haman was elevated. So after mai, so what do you mean after what? Amar Rava after shabara Hakadosh Baruch Hu lefu lamaka means after Hashem created the healing before the womb. So before Hashem is going to elevate, before Haman is going to be elevated, Hashem already arranged that Mordechai had already saved the king's life. Hashem never strikes the Jewish people before first creating the cure. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Kirofi the Yisrael." When I heal Yisrael, the nigla avon Ephraim. Only then will the avera of Ephraim be revealed, and the punishment will come. Avol umas ha'olam einik tain. When it comes to the other nations, it's not like that. Maka oisan v'achakach boru lahem refuah. First, Hashem strikes them, and then He creates the cure. Shenem of a nogif, Hashem is Mitzrayim, nogif for Rafa. As the Pasuk says, Hashem will strike Mitzrayim, a striking and a cure. And the reason is, one reason for it is, because the other nations may eventually, it may be they're trying to be destroyed. So Hashem strikes them with punishment, and then if Hashem decides that He has reason to still keep them around, or they do tshuva, or whatever, then Hashem can heal them. Whereas the Jewish people, they're always going to exist. They're the purpose of the world, so therefore Hashem has to create the cure first.
Achar means some, isn't there a lot of years here as well?
Maybe, but that's why the Gemara is asking. Why are we implying that that was shortly afterwards? Okay. Next, the Pasuk says, Vayivez ve'ein of the shloyach yod b'mordechai levadoi, that it seemed contemptible in Haman's eyes to send out his hand, in other words, to attack Mordechai alone. So the Pasuk says they told him the people of Mordechai, and then that he wanted to destroy all the Jewish people. So what does that mean? First, Haman wanted to get Mordechai himself. Then the pasuk continues that they had told him who the people of Mordechai are. What does that mean? Umanu Rabbanan. They told him that Mordechai is one of the Chachamim. So like the Chachamim are like his people that he's closest with. So Haman was thinking to get them. Eventually he decided to take it out on all the Jews. Next, the pasuk says, Hipil Pur Hu HaGurdle, that he made a lottery, which is a girdle. So Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kivin Shenafel Pur B'Chodesh Adar, when that lottery came out on Chodesh Adar, Samach Simcha Gdola. Then that Haman was extremely happy. Omar, he says, look at that, Nafel B'Pur, V'Yerach Shemes by Moshe, the Pur landed in the month where Moshe passed away. So therefore, like the Jewish people have lost their schus. Especially, Marashah says, it was your Gimel Adar, which is within the Shiva of Moshe. So like they don't even have the schus of, they're still in mourning for Moshe. Now he didn't know Shiva Adar Mess. It's true that Moshe passed away on the 7th of Adar, but he didn't know Shiva Adar Noila. He didn't know that Moshe was also born on the 7th of Adar, and therefore it means that they have the source of him. In fact, when you think about it, it comes out that Moshe's bris was on Yud Dalet Adar, and that's in fact the day that they ended up celebrating for him. Why didn't he know? Marsha explained, because the date of Moshe's Patira, you can learn, you can derive from the Psukim, but to know that he was born on the same day, that we only know, because the Chachamim tell us that Tzaddikim are born and pass away on the same day, and Haman didn't know that concept. Next. Yeshnei Amechad, he comes to Achashverosh and tells him there is one people. Omar Rava, so Rava says, you look at the way he phrases it in the Psukim, Leka Diyada Lishna Bishna Kahaman. There was nobody who knew how to say such good Lashon Hara as Haman did. He had an argument for everything. Amalei Ton Nichlinu, he starts by telling Ahasuerus, let's destroy the Jews. Amalei, so Ahasuerus tells him, Mistapina Melikov, I'm afraid of their God. Dolela Evidbi Kedavid Bekamo, he shouldn't punish me like he did all the previous people who tried to destroy the Jewish people. Amalei, so Haman starts by telling him, Yoshnu mina mitzvahs, Yeshnu meloshin Yoshnu, they're asleep, they're not keeping mitzvahs, and therefore you don't have to worry that Hashem is going to defend. Or Marsha says also the word Yeshnoi can also be related to the word Shoine, like they're changing, they're altering and changing the mitzvahs, and they're not keeping them properly. Amalei, so Ahasuerus says, sure, but Isbahur Rabbanan, but there are Chachamim among them, aren't they keeping the mitzvahs? Amalei Amechadheim. So Haman tells him, don't worry about it, they're all one nation. They're all acting the same way, they're also not keeping the mitzvahs, or maybe they are, but Koisel Arim Zelazes, they're also held responsible. So he tells him, Amechadheim, he tells them, they're one nation. In other words, Rashi explains, when you look at the word that Haman used, you could deduce from the words that he said what Ahasuerus was telling him, that each phrase of his is answering some objection of Ahasuerus. So he continues, Shema Tema Korchani Osamapasacha. You're going to say, but if we kill all the Jews, then it's going to be like there's a bald spot in your kingdom. Like there's at least one country that's full of Jews, and therefore now that country is going to be empty. Don't worry, Mefuzarin, Hang Ben Amin. They're scattered among the nations. There's so little in each place that it's not even noticeable that they've gone. Shema Tema Ishanominayu. You're going to say, but we get some benefit from them. No, he says, Mefoda. They're Mefoda, which doesn't just mean scattered. It means Kiprigazu Shaina Osaparis means the Jews are like a mule that doesn't produce any offspring. So the same way that Jewish people are useless and they're not actually producing anything useful for the kingdom. You might say there's at least one country, one small country that's composed exclusively of Jews. Or Marsha says maybe it means that you could take and concentrate them all in one country. No, he tells him they're in all the provinces of your kingdom, so like they're too scattered to be able to, there's no one country that you can say that has a lot of them, and you can't even say you should gather them all from all the provinces in one country. It's not going to be possible. He continues, but Dasayim Shonis Mikolam, their laws are different than any other nation, which means They have laws that are made, that are designed to make them different from any other nation. So like Achliminon, they don't eat our food. But like Nasliminon, they don't intermarry with us. But like Nasliminon, they don't marry our women. But like Minsvilon, they don't get married to us. Their women don't marry us. So like they're antisocial, kind of. That's Dosti Amelach Enim Osim. He continues, they don't follow the laws of the king, which means the Machil Cholashata B'Shihipi. The whole year round, they're claiming anytime, they tell them to do work for the king. Today's Shabbos, today's Pesach, Shihipi stands for Shabbos and Pesach. Again. So like they're always using excuses, it's their Shabbos or their holidays and they can't work.
It's ironic that if you just marry
to the Jewish people, they don't marry us. Who's married? Oh, Achashverosh is married to a Jew, right, man. And Haman continues, it's not worth it for the king to leave them, which means, he says, in other words, that not just they're useless, but they're actually acting in a way that insults the king. You see, when they eat. Sorry. They eat and drink, and while they're doing that, they're mocking the king. Because, you see, if a fly falls into one of their cups, he'll throw out the fly and drink the cup. But if my master, the king, touches a cup of theirs, a cup of wine, he's going to throw it on the ground and not drink it. So you see that they're insulting you. They consider you less than a fly. He continues, if it's good in the king's eyes, you cost your abdom, then let it be written to destroy them. And I'll give 10,000 kikar of silver. So why 10,000? It's well known and revealed to Hashem who spoke and the world came into existence. That Haman is eventually going to offer shkalim to be sure the Jewish people. Lefichach hiktim sheklayim the shikla. Therefore, Hashem made long before that the Jewish people are bringing machzah shekel to counteract his shkalim. Behind the stand, be'echad adam, Hashemin al shkalim, malakalayim. And in fact, in keeping with that, on the Shchodesh Adar, they announce about the shkalim and on the kalayim. So therefore, in other words, that they announce that everybody should bring the shkalim, and they announce that anybody who has kalayim in their field when the plants are starting to grow, so therefore the kalayim are noticeable, should uproot the kalayim. So we see that if that's done, the Shchodesh Adar, so therefore it's associated with the fact, it's associated with Haman's decree, which was going to take place in Shchodesh Adar, but we're saying that Hashem had made the concept of Machzah Shekel long before. Further on in the Gemara, on Daktas Zayin, there's a Tosfos that says that Haman's 10,000 kicker of silver was meant to count, was meant to correspond to the Machzah Shekel of 600,000 Jews. Now, the problem with that is when you calculate that, it doesn't work out because the Machzah Shekel of 600,000 adult male Jews comes out not to 10,000 kicker, but only 100 kicker, 100 as much, 1/100 as much. So there's a few different explanations what Tosfos means over there. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that maybe Tosfos wrote Ches Shin, which actually stood for Chamishim Shkolim, namely the 50 Shkolim that's the Erech of the Erech that's given to the Beis Mikdash. If a person donates the Erech of a male from 20 to 60 years old, then you pay 50 Shkolim, multiply that by the 600,000 Jews, and divide it by Kikrim, and you have 10,000 Kikrim. That's one explanation. A different explanation is he meant the Machzah Shekel that a person pays during 50 years of their lifetime, because a person starts paying Machzah Shekel when they're 20, and you add the average person lives till 70, and therefore that multiplies it by 50, and there's a regular kicker, and there's a kicker shel hekdesh. There's a lot of discussion about that. But the point is, we're saying that Hashem made the Machzah Shekel to counteract what Haman is trying to offer the king, Shkolim, in order to destroy the Jewish people. So we'll continue with the drushes on the Megillah. We'll continue tomorrow morning. That's it then.